Good evening, folks, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my two colleagues from the blogosphere, as we say, Joe McHugh from Video Celts and James Forrest from the Celtic blog. So we have plenty to talk about this evening, plenty of points, good and bad. Coming off the back of a pretty miserable weekend, we were all, without putting too fine a point on it, pissing ourselves laughing on Saturday. And then come Sunday, what the hell happened? We have no idea how. I mean, to be fair, it's probably one of the worst Celtic performances I've seen all season, aside from the two games against Ibrox. We just had no answers for a rigid, rock-solid St. Johnstone defence and a keeper who was on fire on the day. So yeah, there's plenty of fallout and plenty of things to chat about in relation to that game on last Sunday against St. Johnstone at McDiarmid Park. It was a shame for all the Celtic fans that travelled, filled the three stands there, and were subjected to a bore fest, really. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. So without further ado, I will go over to James Forrest to get his opinion on Sunday's game and what he thinks the what kind of rot may or may not be settling into our team at the moment. So what do you think, James?
Well, I've spent the last couple of days writing about this, and it's a subject that has thoroughly depressed me at every stage. It would be easy and it would be lazy and it would be entirely wrong to put this into a bad day at the office, because this is not one bad day at the office. This is repeated bad days at the office. This is, I come to work every Monday with a hangover. Days at the office, which suggests that there is a problem that is bigger than just your performance on the job. You can misread this kind of situation. You can read too much into it. And you can rend your garments and start talking about the team needing rebuilt and the manager needing sacked and rip it up and start again. I don't want to go anywhere like that. I don't think any of that is a solution, because I don't think the problem is as big as that. But there is a problem. Clearly, there is a problem. And it is not going to go away on its own. The manager and the players are going to have a hard look at what the hell has been happening these last 2 months and come to some sort of conclusions. And I think about how we got here in the first place. This is obviously a really good team. It's obviously got really good players in it, and it's obviously got a really good head coach. But we've deteriorated rapidly since January. And I don't know what the cause of it is. I genuinely don't know what the cause of it is. There is some speculation that morale took a dent at Ibrox and has never recovered. I don't know if that's true. But something's certainly gone wrong in the mindset and in the thinking. I think whatever ailed us at Ibrox that day is still ailing us right now. It may be, as Rodgers has put it, a bit of an overconfidence and players feeling demotivated because we're so far ahead in the league and nobody realistically expects us to lose it. But as long as we can still lose it, we should be thinking that every game is important and we should be putting 3 points in the bag every single week until that title is won. And then if people want to falsely put it, we are perfectly entitled to do it. But the job isn't finished yet, and we need to get back to doing what we were doing best up until it all started unraveling. I've been thinking a lot about how we've got here in the last couple of days. And I wrote a piece yesterday about tactics. We've been playing a variation of the 4-2-3-1 system for the last 10 years under four different managers: Ronnie, Lennon, Ange, and this guy. And two of the managers have been here twice, of course, and we don't seem to have evolved tactically, which is surprising because Rodgers is a good tactical coach and he does change his tactics frequently when he was at other clubs. I mean, when he was at Leicester, I had a look at a tactical analysis of his time at Leicester yesterday. And I think he played about 7 different tactical formations at Leicester, including playing 3 at the back, 2 up front, 5 in the middle. There were times when he played 5 at the back, went man marking, depending on who he was coming up against. And you don't see any variation in the way we play just now. And we play teams four times a season. If their managers haven't got us figured out by now, they never will. And I think too many of them do have us figured out. And I think that if not a tactical change, then certainly some tweaks are necessary if we're going to continue to win games comfortably and amass points the way we did in the first half of the season. It's just not working right now. And Rodgers ultimately has to take the responsibility for that and fix it. But it's been a depressing start to the week, to say the least.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you've kind of said there, James. I kind of go back to a blog that you wrote back in Brendan Rodgers' previous tenure. And you said, you might or might not remember it, you said that the one decent thing that Brendan Rodgers had in his locker as a manager is that he always had a plan B.
Yeah.
When things went kind of pear-shaped with plan A. He was able to always come up with...
Yeah, I mean, the classic example is what he did at Ibrox when he brought on Edouard. Now, we've all talked about that as being an example of Rodgers, you know, mastery of tactics. But the important thing about that wasn't so much that the change succeeded and that he brought on the second striker. Rodgers knew what to do the second we went down to 10 men. He knew, he always had a plan for that. I kind of remember a Celtic manager whose record when we go down to 10 men is as good as Rodgers, because he always used to know what formation switch to make and what changes to make when that happened. And that Brendan Rodgers, I don't know what the hell's happened.
Yeah, that's...
There might be a bit of complacency in this, and there's a bit of fear in it as well, because the last dozen or so years that we've been using the 4-2-3-1 or the four, the variant 4-3-3 or whatever people are calling it, it's the same formation, but it's brought us a lot of success, and I understand why there would be a reluctance to change it, unless it was catastrophically failing. But if we keep playing in the predictable manner we are, then some form of catastrophic failure, whether that's losing a semi-final at Hampden or whether it's losing the final at Hampden or whatever, is going to happen eventually.
Yeah, but at the moment it seems to be a self-inflicted sort of failure, you know, because we don't seem to... Brendan just doesn't seem to have a plan B. And you start to fear that the worst possible thing that can happen in a game at the moment is that we go behind early, because we just don't seem to have answers if we go behind early. And Sunday was a perfect example of that, because as soon as St. Johnstone had scored, they just shut up shop and they literally camped inside their box for the whole of the game, barely broke out. Their goalkeeper was on fire. He was saving everything that was coming at him. He was just inspired. There was nothing we could do about that. You know, James Forrester, when he came on, your namesake, had plenty of chances to score more than one goal and to put the game to bed, and just could not beat the keeper. So it was very frustrating. But what was more frustrating than anything else was the lack of a change of tactic, a lack of just maybe desire. There was like definitely a lack of desire from the players. I mean, the only player who came on and really seemed to want it more than anybody else was James Forrest. When he came on, he was going for it. Yang did his usual trickery that leads to absolutely nothing. I'm sorry, Rio Atate. That guy's checked out, as far as I'm concerned at this stage. He was his usual crap self. He had chances handed to him on a plate. That one that he blazed over was just sinful. So it's just hard to wrap your head around. It was a game... I made my predictions last week and I said that we'd win it comfortably 4-5-0 and Dyson Maeda would score a hat-trick and that Ibrox would lose, the Ibrox side would lose at Hibs, and first half of the prediction came through, but the second half fell flat in its face. So, I mean, what's your take on it, Joe? What do you think?
It's more than freakish or one-off. There's a very definite pattern there. We've lost the first goal six times since the turn of the year and lost each of those games. So it used to be a trait of Celtic sides that when you lost a goal, went behind, they doubled their efforts and pummeled teams to death. But that's not happening. But I think the problems are a lot deeper than just been a bit off form, and it calls for leadership, which, as we know, is something that's completely absent at Celtic. It was great getting Brendan Rodgers back in a 3-year contract, but as we now know, that there's just over a year left in that contract, and I suspect there's stalemate there. It's catch 22. He wants changes. He wants players coming in, and the board won't give him that until he's committing to a contract, and he won't commit to a contract till he sees what's happening. And it does require someone to bang some heads together. We know Michael Nicholson will be cowering away in a corner somewhere, and only once it escalates to Dermot Desmond levels will anyone do anything about it. So there's a lot of issues there, and it's hard to see them getting resolved before the end of the season. Just got to hope that they can, that the league is still won. They could probably win the league even by losing all the remaining matches. If they win on Saturday, I would expect the title to be decided at Aberdeen on Sunday, even though they've got the double, Aberdeen face a double act of Stephen McLean and Andrew Dallas. But that shouldn't really be our concern. The manager's got about 14, 15 players that he can trust. I think the sale of Kyogo and no replacement coming in was a signal from the board that that's the season over with, lads. And it was also a signal to the dressing room that the club would rather sell you than play you. So if that's the attitude, then guys like Hitati, every player, you're always looking if there's something better available. There's no speculation about Jota going anywhere, and then he went to Saudi Arabia. So the players and agents are always looking to see what's on the go. And it's very obvious that if an agent comes to Celtic and says, by the way, I've got 12, 15, 18 million pound bid coming in, Celtic will be rubbing their hands. So it needs leadership. It needs a change of attitude. We know ourselves that Celtic just let events evolve and happen around them. They're not proactive. Michael Nicholson should have been demanding Brendan Rodgers, Callum McGregor and someone else come in to speak to him Monday morning. What's going on, lads? Look at the last 8 away results. 3-3 at Dundee, losing 3 goals at Ibrox, losing 4 goals at Aston Villa, toiling at St Mirren, losing to Hibs, losing to St John's. It's poor, poor form. It's a form we associate with our City rivals, and it's on our doorstep. Fortunately, all we're interested in is tracking them and being one step above them. That's still on course for this season. That'll keep the majority of people happy, but it needs some out-the-box thinking, some activity, some action. I don't expect it, so I expect more of the same the remainder of the season. There might be a bit of a reaction on Saturday against Kilmarnock, but once complacency sets in, it's very difficult to get rid of, and there's other bigger issues that need to be resolved before things are going to pick up against the team. The post-split fixtures, they might not be very pretty at all. There'll be 3 away games, one of them's at Ibrox, and at this distance, you wouldn't put money on Celtic winning any of those matches. So drastic change, leadership's needed. I don't see any of them coming. That's the message of doom.
Yeah, well, I suppose it goes back to what you're saying there about, you know, there's no joined up. There doesn't seem to be any joined up thinking. It seems to me that Brendan operates very much under his own steam. What, if any, communication is going on between him and Michael Nicholson? There doesn't seem to be any accountability. Nobody is accountable for anything. It's like you said there, Joe, Michael Nicholson should have been banging heads on Monday morning and asking what the hell happened at St Johnstone. But at the same time, does Brendan Rodgers go to Michael Nicholson and say, this is what I need to fix this problem? Is he listening to him? It's hard to just know exactly what's going on. And I think we discussed it in the last podcast, the communication, you know, where Brendan Rodgers said that he was going straight to Dermot Desmond about Desmond Maeda. That means he's bypassing the board members. He's going straight to the top, which means that he obviously has no interest in communicating with them, because maybe he feels exactly as we do. So yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to kind of get that nasty feeling that Brendan Rodgers might not sign the dotted line. We could lose some key players in the summer, and you discussed, James, there recently enough about a rebuild. You know, are we looking at a summer rebuild? I mean, what's your take on that? Are we looking at a rebuild in the summer?
Nothing necessarily to be afraid of, a rebuild, but I think unnecessary. This team doesn't need much done yet. It only needs players in three or four key positions and a couple of backups. That's it. It doesn't need radical surgery. But I'm not necessarily afraid of radical surgery if that is what the manager thinks that should be done. Because I keep on thinking, in terms of Rodgers' third season, I keep on thinking of that old football wisdom that the third season is the killer. Can't remember whose quote that is. I was trying to find it on fucking Google there and I couldn't find it. I have it slotted away somewhere in my brain. I'm sure it'll come to me. But the idea is that managers of the two successful seasons very rarely get a third one with wheels starting to fall off the bus, because if you play the same tactical system, it's become predictable. If you rely on the same number of players, they get jaded and they get bored and they get frustrated coming up against the same teams and playing the same way and the same approach. And so there's this idea that you have to reinvent yourself in the third year in order to go again. And I wouldn't necessarily be concerned if Rodgers thought that that is what we needed today. But it's a third major rebuild in 3 years. That's mad. We shouldn't be in that situation. And we probably wouldn't be in that situation, of course, had Rodgers got to do the rebuild in the first season on his own terms, which he didn't get. So I don't know. It would make no sense to do a third year rebuild, especially if Rodgers' future is uncertain and we don't know who's going to be the manager in the fourth season, because that may entail another rebuild. It is ludicrous. You can't just keep doing this. It's a sort of weird variation of it. The mob across the city are always having to do, but then they're always having to restart because they sacked the manager. We've fortunately not been in that position. But this would be the... I mean, Ange had to do a rebuild in his first season. Rodgers had to do a rebuild in his first season. And second season this time around. So another one would be, what, 3 and 4 years? 4 and 5 years? It makes no sense to keep on doing this. It's like being stuck in a revolving door. The team doesn't need that much. But I think more than anything else, it just needs a tactical rethink. I don't know.
I'd agree with you on that. We definitely need a tactical rethink, because the problem is now that we're at a point and our juncture where everybody has us figured out. And they know exactly what they know exactly how to set up against us. They know exactly how to get at us. So look, we can dwell on Sunday's debacle all night if we want to, but there's no point. So we'll move on to our next subject.
I'll tell you what is weird though, Eric. Right, the first season that and Rodgers' first tenure, we do the invincible treble. Right, the following season was a car crash. If you look at the form in the following season, domestically, it was awful. It was absolutely terrible. And we still won the treble. And my memory of the third season, because it ended halfway through it for Rodgers, I don't think we played particularly well that third season either. But certainly the second season, the form was terrible in the second season.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you look at the second season, realistically, the wheels came off the Hearts game. Do you remember we had that record unbeaten run? And then we went to Tynecastle and we got hammered 4-0 at Tynecastle. And then it was hit and miss from there on in that second season. And we seem to just almost mirror what we're doing now. We're having good game, bad game, good game, bad game.
We went to Ibrox in January talking about the possibility of doing another Invincible campaign. We lost that game and the team's not the same since.
Yeah, it's just never been right since. So... yeah, like I said, we could be chatting about it all evening, but we'll move on to our next subject. So, what's gone wrong with Nicholas Kuhn? And for a guy who really started the season on fire and was just untouchable on the right side, it just you wonder, was his head turned in the last transfer window? Was there, you know, interest shown that we don't know about? I don't understand. I think the last real momentous contribution that Nicholas Kuhn had was at Bayern Munich when he scored that goal. And we've just seen nothing from the guy since. He's been anonymous since. And we know he's a very good player. We know he's a very good winger. But how do you go from hero to zero like he has in such a short space of time? He has literally just dropped off completely. And there tends to be a persistence on Brendan's behalf to play him, despite the fact he's playing very poorly at the moment. And it just doesn't seem... The whole scenario with Nicholas Kuhn is just not making any sense. Has he checked out of the building? Has he decided he's leaving in the summer? It's just hard to know. What do you think, Joe? I mean, I can't figure out why the guy has just gone to pot in the last... Since the Bayern Munich game, really.
Part of the reason is you get lumps kicked out of you in Scottish football, and it's a warning to Kieran Tierney when he's coming back. They'll be kicking lumps out of Kieran Tierney early next season. So a couple of incidents. League Cup final, Jeff Day batters Kuhn on the Achilles, and I can't remember if it was a booking or not. Play on, and there's various incidents like that. The game at Ibrox, we were rotten, but you're still entitled to the rules getting played. Jeff Day again with a trailing arm, his hand, ended up bursting Kuhn's nose again. There was definitely no booking for that. These things are just routine in Scottish football, and for somebody that's played in Holland, Germany and Austria, it'll be completely alien to Kuhn, and it's only natural you'd look to protect yourself a little bit. So he's in a long-term contract. He signed in January last year for five and a bit years. So he's got a long term to go in his contract. I don't know what's going on with that. I suspect his agent, he's got a decent showreel with goals against Bayern Munich and RB Leipzig in the Champions League. He also, during this out of form spell at Celtic, he's had no competition. I mean, Yang can come on and do this and that, but I don't think Yang's ever played a solid 90 minutes for Celtic, so Kuhn knows that there's no real competition there. Perhaps James Forrest is about to repeat what he did last season. I think he did it. I was running about the same time last season, and the league was still very much up in the air. The league was still live. The league is as good as gone, but perhaps James Forrest might get more out of Kuhn, but there's a few factors there. Competition counts, and when opponents are hammering through you every turn with no protection, that's also a factor. Even if you're from Scotland, it's still difficult to accept. When you've come from Germany and Austria, it's a completely different ball game. There are factors in it, and you can say toughen up and all these things, but the bottom line is people don't like getting kicked. They don't like having folk bursting your nose. And when that's happening at your place of work, you're bound to be a little hesitant. And I don't see anyone in Scottish football saying we need to clamp down and things. It's part of the charm and attraction of the Scottish game. So it's another one that's not got an easy solution. Kuhn will need to toughen up if he's going to survive at Celtic. And we might lose some of his skill if he's got to bulk up a bit. So more misery from East Kilbride. Over to you, James.
I think there's an element of truth in what you've said about the roughhouse treatment that he's had recently. I think that is certainly a part of what is wrong. But I think Rodgers is right in all about the mentality thing. There are a lot of your players who have never been part of a team that is basically cantering towards a title. And that can be a different kind of... That takes a different mentality to do that and stay focused every single week and stay sharp. And some of these players need to learn that mentality. They need to learn that the expectation level isn't less because you're 13 points or 16 points clear. And that might be, that might take some adjustment period before they get that into their heads. Isn't it a coincidence that the two performances that Joe highlighted with his highlights reel are Champions League games? Is it must be a lot easier for these guys to get themselves up for the kind of fixtures than it is for playing the bottom team in the league when you're so far in front in the league. And Rodgers is right. Some of these guys might not have the mentality for that right now, and they need to adjust. I mean, if Kuhn's head has been turned, that is the other obvious possibility. If his head's been turned, then somebody wants to have a wee word in his ear that, as Joe pointed out, he's on a long-term contract, he's only been here 18 months, and if he wants to sell it for a bigger club, he's going to have to play a lot better than he's playing right now. Because the kind of move that he would have got in the January window will not be available to him in the summer if the manager keeps subbing him at halftime. That's Cyril Dessers' country he's in now, and he needs to be aware of that. Yeah. I don't think there's all that much, Ryan. Kuhn set such high standards in the first half of the season, it was always going to be difficult to set the same standards in the second half. I hope we see the real Nicholas Kuhn at Hampden in the two games that are there when there's something at stake. Because it is obvious that there are certain players who thrive best under pressure. When they feel like they're under pressure and the team's under pressure and they need to dig deep and they need to, and some players find it harder to adjust to playing in a team that wins every week and is expected to keep winning every week. I'm hoping that that's what it is, and it's not a case of his head being turned. If his head has been turned, he's not getting out of Celtic Park anytime soon for the kind of club that he would have got a few months ago.
So in a nutshell, do you guys think that if we were in a different scenario at this moment in time and we were actually fighting it out for the title, that we'd be seeing better performances from these guys?
Some of them would be, aye. I think some of the performances.
Do you think more would be up for the fight?
I think these guys were both on the last pitch season. We think that there was something at stake, right? And that's the problem, because it's difficult convincing a guy who's never been in this situation in his career that there is something at stake on in a game like the weekend. It's not an excuse. It's a reason, but it's a possible reason, but it's not an excuse. And that's what Brendan will have told them all. Listen, I understand, but it's not. That's not acceptable here. I understand the situation, but it's not acceptable. That's not how we do things at Celtic. And that message has to be loud and clear. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Brendan made it loud and clear at the weekend.
He did.
As somebody said to me the other day, and as I put in one of my articles, Brendan's never going to do a Barry Ferguson, like go in front of the media and stamp his feet every week and, no, it's not acceptable, no, it's not good enough. Brendan sounded like a guy who was genuinely pissed off, but also hurt and a bit, like, mortified. He's been beaten by the team bottom of the league. He's been shown up by a fucking tabloid journalist, and he doesn't get why the team has fell into this kind of form. And he's trying to work it out, and he's trying to sort their heads out. So Brendan doesn't need a shouting ball. Brendan's not a shouting ball type. Brendan knows that it's not going to fly in the modern. And the modern game is... And he's a modern manager. He will know how to get through to these guys. He's challenged their pride. That's what he did. He didn't start banging on about this is unacceptable. No, this club should be... Or the Ferguson rubbish. He attacked their pride. And he basically said to them, you know, do you have the balls for this? Do you have the fucking heart to play for this club? And I think you may see a bit of an improvement in what's left of the season. I hope so. He's handled it right. He's certainly handled it right.
Yeah, what's your cynical view, Joe?
Yeah, there's truth in it. The bulk of this squad was around this time last year, and they found fantastic form. They were winning game after game. Yep. They went to Ibrox. Everything was against them. They're up against the future England goalkeeper, and they left the guy trashed. So The players generally have done it, and they done it well in the first half of the season.
Yeah.
But the fixture list is unrelenting. I mean, the weather just now, because of the split, we've got to get the bulk of our fixtures done, get them out of the way as quickly as possible. And weeks like this, there's no prospect of playing matches. So there's a big toll on players. Fortunately, we didn't have many injuries through the main part of the season. We seem to run into a few at the Glasgow Derby a couple of weeks ago. But there's something subconscious in players. Going to play St Johnston, even though there's a title party prospect round the corner, looking at that pitch, it's bone dry, opponents that are fully fired up. There's something somewhere. Guys, a title party isn't such a big deal for most of those Celtic players. If you're from the west of Scotland, it'd be great. If you're Kieran Tierney, you'd know your pals will be out living it up and things. But most of them, it's not such a big deal. They're going to win the league at some point fairly soon. Last season, the pressure was on. They were breathing down our necks. And the players responded. They got the draw at Ibrox. They crumbled in the back of that. They went to Ross County and lost and drew at Dundee. And Celtic drew strength from that. So the players can deliver. But the manager's got a few issues in his hands. He's going to have to look at players in training, perhaps tweak the system. I mean, he seems incredibly bonded to this system. There must be a way when you're struggling that you can have two wingers and Maeda and Ida in the team. I mean, could you have taken off a fullback on Sunday? Yes. Could you have taken off trustier Carter Vickers? Yes. And just push down deep. If there's a few high balls going into Adam Ida and two wingers plus Maeda round about, the chances are something would fall to you, even a shot being deflected in. But he likes to play football the purest way, his way, and sometimes you need to change it. So most things about the team is all there. We're probably four or five matches away from winning another treble, which is a great achievement. It's not world-beating. It's not the whole of Europe standing up and saying, look at that, incredible Celtic win a treble. But it's what's in front of you. It's a challenge in Scotland, and they're very likely to carry that off. Deserve great credit for that. But at the same time, you can point out that the garden isn't completely rosy. There's issues there, and no one knows that more than the manager. And he's also got his own little dilemma going on about whether he goes for a new contract and who's undermining him in the background and what it takes for Dermot Desmond to get involved and bang some heads together and get this club moving forward confidently into a Champions League playoff at the end of August. That really should be a lot of focus, but there's other issues taking us down different directions at this time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, taken in isolation, if you look at since the game at Parkhead against the Ibrox side, for Brendan Rodgers as a manager, you talked earlier on there, James, about pride and that he's challenged the players' pride. And there was a very good reason for that. I think you're right in what you're saying there. He's challenged the player's pride because his own pride has been dented. And when you, as I said, if you take the games in isolation, we say the last three games since the game at Parkhead against them, he's been beaten by a journalist, effectively. And then to go 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later to be beaten by the bottom side, that's got to dent his pride. That's got to hit him hard as a manager. So, yeah, I think you're probably right when you say we're going to see a different Celtic. We're probably going to see a few changes as well come Saturday. Because if he's going to challenge the player's pride, he's also going to challenge their pride by dropping a couple too. I think you could see your namesake starting next Saturday.
Somehow. I hope so.
Yeah.
Hope.
So, look, can I offer
a bizarre observation, right?
Go on.
I'm sitting here thinking, I'm sitting there, the shit that goes through my mind, honest to God. I'm sitting here trying to think of an analogy for the kind of mentality that switches off when things are going well, as opposed to like the kind of person who whose main drive and focus comes from being perfect, right? And I've actually come up with a bizarre one, right? We've all seen guys out on the town with their girlfriends, right? And some of them you look at and you think to yourself, how did you ever end up with her? And what is she doing with you? Right?
Yeah.
And if you ask the lassie that question, right, 8 times out of 10, you're going to get, he didn't look like that when I met him. And that's what it is. That's what it is. There's a certain mentality that's like, well, I've landed a good-looking bird. I don't need to make an effort anymore. Right? Without realizing that, you know what I mean? You have to keep making the effort if you want to keep her. And I think that's the kind of shit that goes through my mind. And that's what I was thinking there. That's the mentality we're talking about. You know, the guy who pushes himself to get fit and look good and whatnot. And then there was a good-looking lassie and then lets himself go. It was like, job's done. I landed her. Yep. Got what I wanted. And then sits on the couch all day and watches Netflix. He's popcorn.
Good analogy, James. Good analogy.
Weird stuff, man, that I think about sometimes.
Yeah. So, look, our next subject is Greg Taylor to Ibrox. Which.
You want to talk about a weird shit going through people's minds?
Yeah. But it doesn't seem to be stopping the SMSM talking about that kind of carry on. And this thing is actually gathering legs in the media, which is even incredible, more astounding.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And James, you did an article about it where you said, like, this really epitomizes how bad things are at Ibrox. That,
oh, yeah.
No offense to Greg Taylor, because he's been a good servant to us, but that to bring him in to that position with Jeff Day and Ridvan Yilmaz in that position at Ibrox, he would be an improvement. And he would be. Like, he genuinely would be an improvement on what they have. But the fact that the media are actually fueling this and they're actually getting carried away with it is... It's starting to become hilarious, but I'll let Joe have his take on it, James, because obviously you're going to have your say, and you had quite a bit to say about it. But I mean, what's your view on it, Joe? What do you think?
It's another fantastic squirrel. The fake over is almost dead in its feet, so give them a little bit of hope, a bit of one-upmanship. That's it. We're snatching Greg Taylor from Celtic, so good luck to them. And When Chris Boyd starts rabbiting about it, you can put two and two together. Boyd used to play with him. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. But Boydie's pals with Taylor. Boydie's pals with Barry. That's it. Done deal. So there's no substance to it. I was thinking, in the olden days, a journalist, a reporter would maybe need to come up with about 5 or 6, 7 decent stories over the course of a year. Now they've got to come up with them every day or maybe 3 or 4 times a day, and there isn't remotely that amount of material to fill the demands.
We should know, guys.
just go down that route, and if somebody says out aloud, Taylor for Rangers, we know Rangers are dead, but in their world they're still alive. Then they'll run with it and do all sorts of comparisons and suggestions and all sorts of nonsense. And I mean, one other aspect, Taylor was a supporter of that mob when he was younger. He was part of the Murray Park conveyor belt, and he got bombed out. So there's probably a fair chance that Greg Taylor can't stand them. He maybe dislikes them as much as some of us in this podcast. In his games against them, he's done what every Celtic fan would like to do with Alfredo Morelos and Todd Cantwell. He's treated them with utter contempt. I suspect he's got similar views for Captain Disappointed, Jack Butland, Cyril Dessers, John Souter, all the other superstars. So I would think he's sitting at home having a laugh. It's not doing his career, his prospects any harm. His agent will be having a good laugh as well. And I think he's more likely to go back to Kilmarnock than he is to cross the city. But that's my take on it. It is hilarious. It's desperate times. And there is not... Nobody can have daily exclusives, never mind three exclusives a day. So good luck to them in the battle to the bottom to see who can be the last legacy website standing, because they're heading down a desperate path. So over to James to launch your thoughts.
I'm surprised that wasn't Brendan on the phone, you know, on Sunday about that, maybe, you know. You know, the Brendan's phone call has really got a lot of people, got a lot of chins wagging.
It's mad, isn't it? Really, it's mad. It's absolutely crazy. There is no universe in which this would be a good idea for anybody concerned. In a sense, you could argue that it's not a bad move for the Ibrox club, right? Because he would walk into that team. He would walk into that team. But that's kind of the problem. That's kind of the point as to why it's not a great idea for them either. Because it exposes the utter rubbish that's been talked about Yilmaz. It destroys the utter rubbish that's been talked about the Brazilian boy wonder. It eliminates now and forever any prospect of Chelsea sending their scouts to watch him. When a guy who wasn't going to be a guaranteed starter at Celtic goes there and walks straight into their team. So it's not a great idea for them, although he would certainly walk into their team. He would certainly improve their starting 11. And it's not a great idea for the player either. Who needs that hassle in their life? Who needs to be that guy? You know what I mean? And people are going to say Kenny Miller did it right, but Kenny Miller didn't do it this way. No player in the modern age has done it this way. Kenny Miller left Ibrox, went somewhere else, and then came to Celtic. And then left Celtic, went somewhere else, and then went there again. So there's no direct route, and there's no way in which doing it by direct route is anything other than a bad idea. I mean, it ruins whatever reputation he has among the Celtic fans completely. He goes there, and what? When he starts to fall off form, it's going to be a Celtic reject. We should never have signed him in the first place. I mean, it's, no one gains from that scenario. No one wins. Except, as Joe says, that it keeps a few journalists in a job a wee tiny bit longer. That seems to be the only upside. And that seems to be the only point to it.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this whole ridiculous proposition otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that you can never flog Greg Taylor for, is his work ethic. And he has worked very, very hard to retain his place and at Celtic, you know. And throughout the years that he's been with us since 2019, he's always worked hard. He's always committed 100% to the cause. And that's one thing you can't flog the guy. And I mean, like, when Ange Postecoglou was there, he flourished in his formation, you know, with the inverted, you know, the inverted left back. So the guy, you just feel that he has worked so hard at Celtic to prove himself at Celtic that he's a Celtic quality player. You're right. He wouldn't want to give himself that headache. He just wouldn't want to put himself through the misery that would come out of making that move. So this is just, it's just the media shooting the breeze. That's all they're doing, and hoping that it'll catch clickbait. Oh, it's clickbait. That's all it is. It's clickbait. So, it's interesting up to a point, but I don't think we need to dwell on it too much longer anyway, if we put it that way. I did see, of course, this is another thing probably, but I was thinking about it, but I did see that the media had a little story on Odson Edward, and what about the prospects of Odson Edward returning to Celtic? And I don't think that's as barmy as Greg Taylor going to the Ibrox side, but I suppose if you're Odson Edward and you have to look at the position the guy is in, I mean, he's gone to Leicester on loan. He is just not even getting a look in there. And I was only thinking when you were talking about the switching up the formation, James, you also wrote on a blog a few years back, just before the club sold Moussa Dembélé to Lyon, that Brendan had just started tampering with putting Edward and Dembélé up front together.
Yep.
You know, so When I saw that article today, that kind of, I thought back to that article that you wrote a few years back about that, that it was, you know, that I was actually getting excited about that prospect of Dembele and Edouard playing up front together as a duo. I think they could have ripped defenses to shreds, you know, if they had that opportunity to do that, you know. So would it be a move that would appeal to him, do you think, given his current circumstances?
It would appeal to him, but I don't know why it would appeal to us. that's the thing. I mean, Rodgers certainly got the best bit of his career out of him. Rodgers knew exactly how to get the best out of Edouard, the same as he did out of Musa. But at this point, we need to be thinking a bit more creatively than that. Because I've done a piece on this the other day, because I think we had already been linked with Starfelt. Then there was Kyogo's available for $3.5 million. Maybe Celtic will go for him. Then there was a suggestion that Peter Grant made a suggestion that there might be a route back to Celtic Park for Matt O'Reilly. I'm reading it and I'm thinking, what? Who? Why? Just why? Why would he want to do it? Why would we want to do it? And then it was, oh, Ange Postecoglou might be home to return to Celtic, and now it's Edouard. And I'm thinking, like, this is like five of these articles in the last week. I mean, does anybody have any imagination when it comes to what we might do in the future? I know we have a board that's hired the same manager twice, right? Which to me is unbelievable in itself. But surely our scouting department is a bit more forward thinking than that. Surely, God, we've got something. Surely, yeah. God, we have a plan B that doesn't involve gone back and signing everybody who pulled on a Celtic strip in the last 10 years.
I mean, well, I'm just going to put a crazy theory out there now while I get the opportunity. What are the chances of, if Brendan Rodgers doesn't sign on for that extension on his contract, of Ange Postecoglou coming back and they're doing it three times?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. If we went and did the same thing again. It really wouldn't shock me. It really wouldn't. Because, I mean, you have to remember that Ronnie wasn't supposed to be the manager. Ronnie was supposed to be Lennon's assistant. And for reasons passing understanding, and I am grateful for it, and I will be grateful for it till the day I die, we decided to appoint a manager. Because I think Ronnie was a revolutionary Celtic boss. And I think a lot of what Brendan inherited, he would have had to build other than Ronnie. But there was no imagination in that whatsoever. He hired Brendan. Well, Brendan was the best available manager who also just happened to know Dermot Desmond well enough that Desmond could make the call. Eddie Howe's the only bit of thinking outside the box. And when that didn't happen, we, in a panic, went to the Citigroup contacts list. And as I said at the time, there were only two managers in the Citigroup book other than Guardiola, who had actually won trophies and so would have been remotely acceptable to the Celtic fans. And one of them was Ronnie Dyla and the other was Ange. So we were never going to go and rehire Ronnie. So Ange had to be. Don't be surprised if we rehire Ronnie rather than Ange next time around.
Yeah. Joe, what's your view on a return for Edouard and then what we've kind of said about Ange Postecoglou?
We never went to the Citigroup. Ange Postecoglou's agent was on the phone constantly. He was on the phone regularly. And when things weren't happening, that was when Celtic said, maybe we should give this guy a listen to. And then there was the Zoom call between Ange and Dermot Desmond.
I mean, there really wasn't, was there? There wasn't a lot of imagination in it. This wasn't some revolutionary idea that we came up with. As you say, it's a combination of, you know what I mean, a guy's agent pushing him. And the fact that Mark Lowell was like, oh, that's a good idea, I know. And I met him at a couple of dinners.
Nothing to do with Mark Lowell.
I don't believe that either, that's what I'm saying. That's why I scoff at the notion. That's why at the time when we hired Mark Lowell and Andrew was like, I've worked with him really well. I'm like, where? When? When was this? There's no evidence that that ever happened. I looked at the two timelines and I couldn't find anything in it that suggested they'd ever worked together or they'd ever worked in close proximity. So, you know, I mean, we must be the most cynical people in the world, but I think we were the only people who called bullshit on that at the time. Just didn't happen.
I think there's more chance of Ange coming back than Edward. As soon as Brendan Rodgers came back, I thought, very good chance that Ange will be his successor. That's the way Celtic now operate. But it's 2025 now. Edward hasn't really been on it since about 2019, maybe 2020. 2019 into 2020. Why not go for Lee Griffiths? He's probably not costing much money. I saw somebody suggesting Celtic have made contact, or Rogers has made contact with Chris Ayer. That's another one that's definitely not happening. So it's almost a case of which former players have we not been linked with? It's incredibly lazy, and you can always stand up the story to an extent, and it will run for 12 hours or 24 hours, and then nothing will happen. So I don't expect any of them happening. There's freaky circumstances for Tierney and Jota. Wren were keen to get Kyogo, and it fell quite nicely that tied in with them looking to get rid of Jota. Tierney's a very unique situation. Possibly Arsenal might be having second thoughts just now, but they to give a date. There was a date on his contract where they had to renew, they had to take up the option for a further year. Tierney wasn't very much in favour at that time. Arteta was full of himself, and they thought they could let that one run. They could leave that, and now Tierney might be involved against Real Madrid tonight. Not as a first choice, but I think the circumstances and Arteta's pig-headedness, that means that it's not going to work out for him. He signed for Arsenal, never signed for Arteta, so it's failed nicely for Celtic. There's very few homegrown players come through, and then the circumstances, and it's appealing to Tierney to come back. So Edward, no. Ange, possibly. And it's the Celtic way again.
Yep, it is. And that's where we really do lack imagination. Like, if we're going, you could see it happening. You could see us going back for Ange Postecoglou if Brendan doesn't sign, because it's an easy out for Ange Postecoglou if things go like the. I think Ange is hanging by a thread anyway, and the only thing that's keeping him there is the Europa League. If he falls in the Europa League, I reckon you could see him fall overall in the job, and that'll be the end of that adventure for Ange Postecoglou, I believe. So it's been a funny week in the fake over saga, culminating in today's news, or today's and yesterday's news, that somehow the media have managed to spin a £76 million loss as something positive for the Ibrox side, as Leeds have posted £76 million losses. So I was back to work after a week's holidays today, and I was kind of flat out inside and work, catching up and everything. So I sat down to look at things to do an article at lunchtime on my break, and I just saw these articles and I was like gobsmacked. So I just posted a piss take, because I couldn't do anything other than post a piss take at this stage because it's just so hilarious. They're desperately trying to keep this thing alive. The only thing that Keith Jackson seems to have is, well, it's going to happen this month. They're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. That's all lawyers can do, apparently, in Keith Jackson's eyes, is dot I's and cross T's. I just think there's a huge element of desperation there now at the moment to keep the whole thing rolling, to keep the whole show rolling. But as I said, posting £76 million in losses being pushed as something positive, that just, I just can't wrap my head around that. So Joe, you're a funny man when it comes to the fake over, so let rip, please.
From the minute I saw the Daily Record World Exclusive Keith Jackson Ibrox takeover, I mean, it was a joke from day one. I mean, it was never happening. 2 days later, no, day one, it was the San Francisco 49ers. Day two, it was Leeds United. Day three, it was Andrew Kavanagh. And Dave King came out. Dave King surfaced in day three to say, much of what's been in the media is far from accurate. Well spotted, Dave, and most of it came from you. So it's never been a goer. Nothing's been happening. Dave King has found a gullible fool in Andrew Kavanagh, and Andrew Kavanagh's found his way to get some hospitality at football matches in, soccer matches in Europe. He's a classic tyre kicker. He's been over for a couple of games. He's enjoyed himself. He's a wee bit of fame, and then he can disappear back in. So nothing's happening. Nothing has ever been happening. Keith Jackson's been flying a kite. Sky Sports said on the 1st of March that the agreement in principle for 51% of the shares, and it's going to due diligence. Last night, Jackson was mumbling away. He was going down rabbit holes himself. Apparently, 25% of the shares are secured. And it's just a wee bit of negotiating, just a few little bits and pieces here and there to get another 25%. But for God's sake, don't mention Douglas Park. Douglas Park stays within half an hour's drive of Daily Record headquarters. He goes to every home match, and nobody's thought to ask him what he's thinking about all this. He's the second biggest shareholder, 11.54%. And if Dave King's anywhere near it, Douglas Park won't be allowing it to happen. So the minute Douglas Park gets involved in this story, it's stone dead. So we might just have another couple of weeks of hilarity out of it, and we'll be remembering the San Francisco 49ers, the same as Off the Radar Wealth and Motherwell-born billionaires. So it's never been happening. I'm enjoying every minute of it. I'll pass over to James for his reflections in the last week.
Well, first, I like that expression, the San Francisco 49ers. I preferred San Francisco myself. But I was, like you, mate, I was amazed at Jackson's comments. Now, I said last week that I think that some version of this will happen. And you've been saying all along that this is a fake over, not a takeover, right? And I'm starting to lean more in your direction than I am. I'm starting to lean more in your direction than I thought I would. Because the more you hear about it, the less sense it makes. And Jackson's revelation the other day that they're on 25-point-something% is profoundly shocking if you're an Ibrox fan who expects this to go through smoothly. I've got a piece going up at 8 o'clock tonight about this exact subject. And I've looked at the kind of various permutations once you reach a certain level of shareholding. And in fact, even the 51% that the Scottish media is talking about barely sounds like enough to justify these people sinking a lot of money into the project to achieve the kind of control that they would require. I think before they would even think about sinking big money in this, they would need closer to 75%, I think. Because 75% lets you propose and pass a special resolution, which lets you change the corporate structure in the way that these guys would want. And I don't think if they've got less than that, they will take a chance on getting overruled in some of their bigger plans. So whatever Jackson thinks is going on here, or has been told is going on here, certainly doesn't sound as if it's going on. I mean, then there is, as you guys said, this whole try to spin massive losses at Leeds as being a positive. There's a kind of weird West Wing moment that I think about quite a lot in the last, that I've been thinking about quite a lot in the last few weeks. They're trying to appoint an attorney general. And the guy they pick is a controversial choice. And one of the press secretary basically tells the assembled hacks, if you want to know why we picked him, go away and look at his record. 2 days later, she's in a pure panic because all the media is writing terrible stuff about him. So she goes in a meeting in the staff theatre. What happened? And she says, I told them to go and look at his record. And she says, well, some of them did. And they're all like, oh, no. Right. And that's the thing here, right? The media's been banging on about the miracle of Leeds, right? And all these superb innovations that these guys have brought in at Leeds, right? And I think if they say it enough times, they think that they can convince themselves that it's real. They certainly have the Ibrox fans convinced that it's real. But if you actually go and look at the record, you don't see that much to be impressed by. You don't see great innovations. You don't see massive changes. As I said a couple of weeks ago, the people who are talking about £40 million transfer war chest are going to have to square that with the fact that Leeds spent £35 million this season to try and get to the Premier League.
Which is looking less likely.
So none of it adds up, right? I mean, the Daily Record did one of its farcical pieces yesterday. And I'm assuming this is the one you're talking about. The six positives, the six big, you know, flashing lights that Rangers fans should all be like, oh, drawn over, right? Well, three of them, at least three of them, were negatives that they're trying to spin as positives. And I found it baffling that they were even attempting something as brazen as that. But their target audience will lap that up. And, and one of the things that I found most amazing was that they were talking about the trading strategy, right? They obviously didn't talk about the £35 million spend because that wasn't part of the sales pitch. But they were talking about the £154 million they brought in as if they were going to replicate that at Ibrox, try to sell the Brazilian boy Wonder and the, you know, the guys who Greg Taylor's going to come in and replace, apparently, right? That they're going to get mega money for this guy and for, you know, people like Dessers and people like Eggerman. You know, it's almost as if just by having these guys in charge, the Ibrox players suddenly become saleable assets all over again. I mean, they're years away from being able to realise anything like that. Years away. You have to rebuild the whole scouting system. You have to rebuild the whole analytics system. Then you need to find the money to go out and sign these guys in the first place. Leeds United managed to trade £135 million worth of Premier League players, mostly other Premier League clubs. So I don't think I would be pinning too much hope on a system like that working at Ibrox. It's mad. The whole thing's mad. I mean, the losses on its own, right, doesn't suggest that they've run Leeds like a Swiss watch. It's all crazy. So go and study what they've actually done at Leeds. Go and look at what their record is at Leeds. It's terrible. There's no great miracle happened there. And so if the Leeds model is what the Ibrox fans think they're going to get, I wouldn't be terribly optimistic about that. I wouldn't be terribly happy about it. I mean, the one proper thing that I think I have read was when the managing director that we'd said about the one of the sales, this is just something fans will have to get used to. This is the policy that we're going to run. You know, if we have a player who we can sell for a profit, we're going to do it. Right, so there's your model. Guys, there's your model. It'll be a toned-down version of the one that Joe, myself, and Eric are always moaning about at Celtic Park. The very second a player reaches the point where you can sell them for mere money, they'll do it. So your team is going to be locked in a permanent cycle of, you know, get a player to a certain level and then he's gone. But you'll never get the kind of big fees that Celtic have got unless you rebuild the whole scouting system and you rebuild the whole analytics system in order to find these guys in the first place. It's pie in the sky. It's mad. It really is mad. And on the basis of this craziness, they've already started selling season tickets and their fans are snapping them up. Go on the forums and there's the odd complaint about the 5% price rise. 5% price rise is nothing, by the way, compared to what the Americans will bring in if they actually do get control. 5%, that's going to seem like a kiss from a page-free model compared to what you guys are going to have to deal with. Because that was the other part. Leeds revenues have went up, right, in the last couple of years, right? A lot of that was on the back of gigantic price increases across the board. But everything, Faye, match tickets to replica shirts, that's in their future as well, and they don't even seem to get that. They will end up paying for this one way or another. Their fans will end up paying for this whole thing one way or another. It's mad. The whole thing's mad. And the more you read about it, the less it all stands up. You go and you look at the Leeds record, it's terrible. You go and look at the necessity of getting a certain percentage of shares before you can do anything meaningful. They're not even going to get there if they get 51%. I just don't, none of it sounds realistic to me. None of it. Joe, you've been right for the start, mate. Takeover, not takeover.
James, right relax, from the start, mate. It's not happening.
Right from the start.
It's not happening. You don't need to worry about Leeds this, Leeds that. Leeds have got no fault to do with it. Leeds, it transformed from the San Francisco 49ers in day one Leeds United day two to mystery businessman Andrew Kavanagh day three. It's not happening. It's nice and exciting to look at all these comparisons. What's happening at Leeds? They've modelled this, expanding the stadium. I don't know how many Leeds United shirts are sold in the United States. It's not happening. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the stupidity. That's me.
Yeah. I mean, the only logic that I can glean from the whole thing is that so Leeds lost 76 million quid. The Ibrox side are about to lose 25 million quid, and that's why they're investing in the Ibrox club, because they're going to lose less than Leeds are losing, because I can't figure it out. I mean, whatever way you pull it apart, it just doesn't make logical sense. There is no sense to it, and I'm 100% on board with Joe, and I have been all along. It's a fake over. It's just all it is, and we said this from day one, was a ploy to sell season tickets.
Yep. And that job is now largely...
And the job is done. The job is done.
I mean, Joe, you've said the most sensible thing the NAs have said on this so far, right? And you said it tonight sitting there, right? Nobody's even picked up the phone. Nobody here in Scottish media has even picked up the phone and asked Douglas Park where he stands on this. And that's the obvious next. That's the obvious step you would take, is to call that guy and say to him, or one of his acolytes, what's his position here? Nobody's even thought to do that. Nobody's even bothered to do that. Oh, and you're right. If they have thought to do it, it's highly questionable that he will. Highly questionable.
They're all aware of Douglas Park, and they're all aware of Douglas Park's answer. So the last thing they're going to do is ask him the question and get that answer. So that kills it stone dead. So that's a very good reason why nobody's went near Douglas Park.
Yeah, but that's the whole concept there is that no news is good news, because they know that if they go to Douglas Park, as Joe says, he'll just give them the news that they don't want to hear. So they're just ignore that. They're just ignoring that option, because that's the nuclear option. That's just going to blow the whole thing apart.
But what kind of shocks me about this, and I'm really late to waking up to how screwed this whole thing is, and how insane this whole idea that they're going to come in and run the club. The bit that shocked me was realizing that in order to exercise the kind of control that these guys would need to put anything significant in terms of money into the club would be 75%, not 51%. Because 75%, you can propose a special resolution, which you need if you're going to change the structure of the club in any meaningful way, right? And without that, you're not going to... There's no motivation for you to spend money. It's like the analogy I used in the piece is that my second year at Stirling Uni, I lived in myself and two guys from Edinburgh that I knew rented a flat, and it was a fucking dump, right? And we really wanted to do something with the place and make it like more hospitable. But the threes agreed that any money that we spent on the place would only benefit the landlord and not us. So if you're renting a house, you don't build a patio on the fucking thing, right? You wait until you own it before you do that. And these guys aren't going to put any meaningful money into the club until they own a meaningful chunk of the club. And that is closer to 75% than 51%. And these guys are only halfway to 51%. It's bollocks. The whole thing is bollocks. I can't believe it took me so long to realise that it's bollocks, but it is. It really is. In the sense that the Daily Record's talking about it and other people with that are talking about it, it isn't going to happen. Nothing like it is going to happen.
Yeah, but all the Record are doing is rehashing the world exclusive every time they talk about it. Every time they talk about it, we brought you the world exclusive. And that's it. They're just harping on about that the whole time. They're giving no new developments. And I think the most up-to-date development we had of late was the 49ers saying that there's nothing happening. So, yeah, it's great. It's great fun. We can all laugh at it. We can all have a good laugh and a joke about it. But we could talk about it all night, but it's time to move on. I think it's time to kind of wrap things up. And what we will do is have a look at the Kilmarnock game and see what kind of predictions we can pull out of that. What's your view on it, Joe? What do you think we're going to do against Kilmarnock? Do you think, as you said earlier on, that we might see a different Celtic on Saturday?
Not much, no. I think it'll be a stodgy, unconvincing 2-0 victory. So it'll be the victory it's required, but I don't think it'll... We started the season hammering Kilmarnock. We got past them in the Scottish Cup. and I think it will be a 2-0. There'll be some nerves at times. Derek McInnes, he's a decent tactician. He might not have the players there, but he'll know how to frustrate Celtic. And I think it will be quite one of my favourite old phrases, a challenging afternoon. There will be difficulties there. We will get through. We will get the points. And I suspect even up against Stephen McLean and Andrew Dallas, Aberdeen will be the most motivated side of the season when they face them on Sunday at Pittodrie. So going for a double, I would say Celtic 2-0 and Aberdeen 2-0. And if Athletic Bilbao throw in another couple of 2-0s, I'll be very happy. But a stodgy 2-0 for Celtic on Saturday.
How about you, James?
I'm always the most optimistic of the three of us here when it comes to predicting our results, and I'm not going to change that now. I think we'll win, I think we'll win comfortably, because I think that the team needed Rodgers to kick him in the head a wee bit, and now that he's done it, I expect to see a response, and I think Nicholas Coon will have a starring role in the game. Unfortunately, I happen to agree with Joe on the game at Pittodrie, and I say unfortunately because I don't want to win the title sitting in the armchair watching the telly, and I think we will. I think this is the weekend.
I'll be happy.
I think the title will be decided this weekend, and we won't be there to celebrate it properly, and that's really gutting from the point of view of having had numerous chances today. I mean Perth should have been the league decider. If we'd have done the job against them at Celtic Park and then went there and won, that would have been it. That would have been game over. But the one silver lining for the Celtic Park game was that it gave us a chance to win it at home at the weekend, and we blew that as well. Very frustrating. And I suspect that we will win it on Sunday.
Scoreline?
As far as Athletic Bilbao goes, I think that they will absolutely crush that lot on Thursday night.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I had a prediction going last weekend, which, you know, it didn't come to fruition. So I'm going to go with the days in my head, a hat trick next Saturday. I'm still hanging in there for that hat trick. So I'm going to say 4-0, and I'm going to say Dazen gets a hat trick, and I think the other scorer will be Jota, and that's my call on it. And I firmly believe, yes, that at Pittodrie they'll do the business. Aberdeen will do the business against the Ibrox side. Probably beat them 2-0, easily beat them 2-0, because if Hibs could do what they did to them on Saturday, I don't see. I mean, they got lucky against Kilmarnock, they got lucky against Dundee. They're not going to get lucky against Jimmy Thiel, and he's a smarter tactician than both Tommy Doherty. And McInnes should have done better. We all felt he should have done better that time, and Joe said he is a good tactician, but I see him being pulled apart on Saturday because I think we're going to get the reaction that we want from the players, because as you said earlier on, James, he's gone at their pride and he's called them out, and I think they're going to have to come out and look. There's a slight motivation there to know that they can wrap it up based on the result the following day, which isn't ideal, and I wouldn't want it to be won that way, but it's probably inevitable that it's going to be. So that pretty much wraps it up for this evening, guys. As usual, folks, if you like what we do, like, subscribe and give us the thumbs up, and follow us as well. We're growing and growing all the time. We're getting a good sort of cult following at this stage. Still reckoning we're the dog's bollocks when it comes to podcasts. So it's been a good one again, as usual, guys. We'll look forward to probably some interesting conversations next Monday night. We'll try and aim for next Monday night anyway, because we'll wait to see what happens at Pittodrie on Sunday. It's been good chatting as usual, guys. I will see you all again next week, and we'll have a good chat then. Talk then. Take it easy. Good luck.